Hello there, and welcome back to the Cory Doctorow podcast. Last week when I spoke to you, I said that if I could, I would be revealing the title of the third Little Brother book in this podcast, and I have permission, so I can tell you the title of the third Little Brother book. It is going to be called Attack Surface, and it will have afterwards by two very special guest stars, and it will be a November 2020 title from Tor Books, and that is the news about the third Little Brother book. The other book that I have some news about is my Green New Deal novel, which I have finally started work on. I'm now very actively outlining it and writing the treatment and kind of getting it in shape to start composing it. And that book now has a working title, and that working title is Lost Cause. And then the other book that I have some news for you about is the same book I've mentioned a couple of times recently. It's my very first picture book, which will be out on July the 14th. It's called Posey the Monster Slayer. It's about a little girl who fights monsters with field expedient monster killing weapons she makes out of the super girly gendered toys in her bedroom. And it will be a book from First Second, which is part of Macmillan. So this week, I'm going to read you some more from Party Discipline. That's the novella I wrote to accompany the launch of Walkaway in 2017. I wrote it while I was on a 35-city, 45-day tour, and it was published in August of 2017 on Tor.com. And now, here's part two of my reading of Party Discipline, a novella set in the Walkaway universe. The cop pulled the vice principal's chair out from behind the desk and sat down on it in front of us. He didn't say anything. He was young, I saw, not much older than us, and still had some acne on one cheek. White dude. Not my type, but good looking. Except that he was a cop, and he was playing mind games with us. Are we being detained? Somewhere in my bag was a Black Lives Matter bust card, and while I'd forgotten almost everything written on it, I remembered that this was the first question I should ask. You are here at the request of your school administration. Oh. Even when there wasn't a fresh lockdown, the administration had plenty of powers to search us, ask us all kind of nosy questions. And after a lockdown? Forget it. Are we entitled to lawyers? Sherelle's voice was a squeak, but I was proud of her. She remembered the second line from the bust card. You are not. The cop looked smackably smug. I didn't say anything. That was definitely the third line of that bust card. Keep your damn mouth shut. He didn't say anything either. Well, I wasn't going to be the first one to speak. The silence went on so long, I started to worry that I was going to bust out laughing because it was damn silly, the three of us sitting there in total silence playing foolish head games. I could tell Sherelle was on the verge of giggling too, that psychic thing you get with your best girlfriends. Don't giggle, don't do it, I thought at her. I was sure she was doing the same for me. And you know what it's like when someone tells you not to laugh when you're about to laugh and that makes it 1,000 times worse? I swear we'd have burst something if the cops didn't finally speak. What do you know about Steelbridge girls? At first, it was just the girls I noticed, because seriously, who the hell was this kid to be calling me a girl? Then I tried to figure out what Steelbridge was, because the name did ring a bell. My cousin Antoine is a sheet metal worker there. Oh, that Steelbridge. I was surprised at first, but Sherelle wasn't telling them anything they couldn't learn with one pass through her social media. He did the silence thing again. Somebody needed to teach that boy a second interrogation technique. Now that we knew what this was about and what he was trying for, the hardest thing about these silences was fighting the giggles. What else do you know about Steelbridge? He was terrible at his job. Maybe too terrible? Could he be trying to lull us into a false sense of security about his cluelessness? If so, he was being pretty obvious about it. Maybe it was a double bluff then, but nah. He didn't seem smart enough for that, so maybe triple bluff? Okay, maybe I was getting nervous too. I don't see what this has to do with school. Didn't you say this came from school administration? What do they have to do with some company in Encino? Oops. Well, it was in Encino, but the fact that I knew it was more than I wanted to say. Lene, you are not as smart as you think you are. We requested that they put us in touch with you two. He was pretending that he hadn't noticed me saying Encino, badly. He jumped like I'd stung him. We're worried about you. He sucked at being fatherly. More staring games. We're worried about you. You said that. We're worried that there may be some illegal activities coming up at this factory. Labor trouble, felonies, jail time. I hear you two are good students. I don't think you want that kind of trouble, not so close to graduating. Was that whole lockdown just so you could get a look inside our backpacks? When Sherelle sounded it, I stared at her in disbelief, but the cop blushed like a stoplight. Shit, that's crazy. How can that even be legal? The cop actually rocked back in his chair. You two are too smart to be in this kind of trouble. I wouldn't want to see you throwing away your lives. I had to look at your grades. You could go to a good university. He gave us what must have been his most significant look. It's better than going to prison for 20 years. The way he was talking and looking at us made me think that he wasn't as confident as he should be. I wondered why. How long after a lockdown does the school have to allow students to talk to their lawyers? He squeezed his eyes shut and then rubbed at them with his forefinger and thumb. Everything you do from now on will be logged. You're in the investigation. Remember that. He stood up and left the office. I guess I knew the answer about the lawyer thing now. Toodaloo. Sherelle only mouthed the words, but it nearly set off my giggles, and I glared at her. It had been old and corny for almost as long as Bye Felicia, but it was also something both our mothers would smack us for saying, and that made it damn funny just then. Once the door clicked behind Detective No Name, Sherelle jumped up and started throwing things in her bag quick as she could, and I did the same after a second. I took the hint of her not saying anything and worked silently. Outside the school, I let my feet autopilot me to the Uber van stop, but she dragged me away toward downtown. There was a row of automats, Korean tacos, pizza, poke bowls, all serving scop, all places I never went. She pulled me into a rice pudding place with 200 flavors and no customers. She bought a large one, and when the window opened with the rice pudding steaming on its little tray, she plopped her phone in it, then snapped her fingers at me. I passed her my phone, not quite believing I was doing it, and watched as she dropped it into the rice pudding as well, then closed the door. All right, they're safe now. Those were the first words either of us had spoken since the cop had left. Sherelle, why is my phone in a bowl of rice pudding? She eye-rolled me. The vending machines are shielded to keep identity thieves from putting in skimmers, and since our phones were inside it, they couldn't get any network service no matter what. I shook my head. How do you know that? I just do, okay? I know people. I snorted. She knew the same people I knew, plus or minus 5%. My guess was that she'd read this online somewhere, one of those hashtag resistance sites. Okay, then why is my phone in the pudding? Because, dummy, if the pudding is left on the release bed, the machine thinks you forgot it and chimes you a few times, see? It was chiming us and flashing a light. But if there's anything on the food bed, it starts taking pictures and analyzing them and sending them to the bomb squad just in case. So we put phones in the pudding and then we get them back and wipe them down when we're done. But Sherelle, it's pudding. She shrugged. Waterproof is pudding proof. What if someone comes in for rice pudding? She gave me a look. Girl, no one eats rice pudding. That shit is gross. I didn't tell her that it was my favorite dessert. My stomach was all in knots anyway. How do you know all this? She shrugged. Looked it up back when you first started talking about communist parties. I started talking about communist parties? Maybe I did. Maybe it was me that started it. I'd always been fascinated with them, that was for sure. Why? Because, Lene, for a smart girl, you are sometimes hella dumb. If you're going to go and get into trouble, I wanted to know what kind and what I could do to take the edge off of it. That stole the words right out of my mouth. Sherelle had done that before, taken my crazy plans and turned them into careful schemes, but I hadn't been thinking of the Communist Party as my plan. Hadn't she told me about Antoine and the factory? You want this as much as I do. She made a face and I knew that I was right. That cop, though. You think he has anything? I think he wants something. He pulled a phony lockdown just so he could search our bags. To me, that says they're worried, but they don't have enough to do something about it. Sherelle, since when are you such a tactician? Since I figured out that you were going to get us both busted if I didn't start paying attention. Lene, communist parties are dumb. They only work when you tell a lot of people about them, and the more people you tell, the more likely it is you're going to get busted. It was true. I shrugged. Everything is like that, sure. Everything. If it's good, it's scary. That's why we do it. If there wasn't any risk from having a communist party, it wouldn't be exciting. But you could still sneak in at night and make the trolleys, give them to the homeless people. Why do you have to have a party? I didn't know, but I felt like the answer was on the tip of my tongue. I shrugged again. I don't know, Sherelle. I didn't invent them. Nah, you didn't. That fool went to jail. Once Tisha was snoring, I got out my burner, a phone I'd made in shop class, following a recipe I'd found on a darknet Google. It had been freshman year and all the kids were doing it, and I hadn't used mine in years. It powered up and complained that it couldn't find its update server and warned that it had been years since it had been patched and that I shouldn't let it near the net. That was good advice, but I couldn't take it. Instead, I gave it a connection through my regular phone, using the app that Sherelle had sideloaded for me using her fingernails, after we cleaned off the rice pudding. That app was designed to let you tunnel your leaky, abandoned smart appliance through it to keep them from being exposed to the public internet, and Sherelle said that no one could listen in on its connections. I hope she was right. I pointed the burner at a site that Sherelle said she'd researched and waited while the burner downloaded new versions of all its software. Once it had rebooted, I was able to connect it straight to the net. My stomach fluttered when I did it, though, and send Sherelle a message at her old anonymous account, a long garbage string like you saw on the cards that drug dealers left in public bathrooms. Sherelle had explained it to me. It was an address in the blockchain that had a public key in it. Download the key, encrypt with it, and post your message back to the blockchain. Everyone could see it, but only the private keyholder could decrypt it. Of course, those messages lived in the blockchain forever, so your secret squirrel ever got hacked for a private key, every message sent this way would be visible to everyone in the world for all time. Like they say in the crime shows, crypto giveth, and crypto taketh away. I figured it out. It took her less than a minute to reply. She was waiting to hear from me. That you? It's me. What did you give me for my 15th birthday? I rolled my eyes. She was such a secret squirrel. Nothing. We had a fight and you didn't invite me. Yeah, okay, you asked me something. Shut up. Come on, it's good hygiene. I thought about all these messages being encrypted and stashed in the blockchain, which I didn't really understand, but always pictured as a huge anthill with trillions of little bugs crawling all around on it. In 10,000 years, would someone figure out how to break the code and read this? Who did you crush on in freshman year? Fuck you. Come on, it was your idea. Ale Martinez, but he was fine in freshman year. Alejandro had become a candy billy in junior year, wearing these crazy outfits that looked like a kindergartner dressed up like a cowboy, and he'd started missing a lot of classes, showing up late and hungover or still high and stupid. I hadn't seen him in a year or more. I knew Sherelle still crushed on him, though. She was 100% smart woman foolish choices. I figured it out. What? Why it has to be a party? This should be good. I checked to make sure Tisha was still asleep. Because it feels like there's no alternative. Like no matter what we do, the same thing's gonna happen. We're gonna end up like your cuz if we're lucky. Get a job that lasts a while before the company runs off and takes our last paychecks too. It's all so big and we're so lil. But put us all together and you can see it. There's other people out there that feel the same as you. A connection, you get it? You woke me up to tell me that? Shut up. Okay, yeah, I hear you. That's a reason and maybe even a good one. But it does make everything a zillion times more dangerous. You want to live forever? Shut up. Tisha opened one eye. Put down your phone already. I'm trying to sleep here. Got to go. Antoine just happened to be at Sherelle's house the next afternoon when we took our homework there, and we just happened to leave our phones inside and went into the backyard to sit under the sunshade with our notebooks and scratch paper. The Wobblies say they can fool the cops into thinking the whole thing's scheduled for the next night. Sherelle looked as skeptical as I felt. How are they going to do that? He looked around. You don't want to know. Sherelle thumped her hand on the table. Yes, we do. It's our asses on the line, too, in case you haven't noticed. He sighed and looked around dramatically. He wasn't much of a spy. Sherelle had a better poker face. I can't talk about it seriously. But not everyone who becomes a cop believes in the system, all right? Some of them just need a job and also a way to look themselves in the mirror. The cops were infiltrated by Wobblies? That would be pretty weird if it was true. But maybe it was true. The world was pretty weird. What happens when we tell everyone at the school to show up on the right date? It's not like they've got the tightest game in the world. They're kids. Cops will find out for sure. Sherelle said it, but I was thinking it too. Antoine made a face. Yeah. Thing is, we gotta be tight about this. We got the same problem, but not with school kids, but all the other people we want to show up. The Wobblies, they said, maybe we just don't tell anyone about it in advance. Instead, we just invite them over for dinner or whatnot, out for drinks, and then we just drag them along, make them bag their phones. Surprise! He made a face. Hell of a surprise. Sherelle side-eyed him. I surprised myself. What if we pretend it's something else, like a party at someone's parents' house? Everyone will come out with their stuff offline because they don't want to get busted for underage drinking and that, and then we'll bring them to the party. We just invite the ones who we trust to keep their mouth shut. Sherelle was about to jump in and say something, but I held my hand up. No, wait, it could work. Thing is, what if there was a party at someone's house and we just diverted some people from it, caught them before they arrived, got them ready, drove them away? We could say that it was someone else's party, not us. No one would know who was organizing it, so no one could snitch on us afterwards. Sherelle had the biggest smile right then, and she made twinkle fingers at me, which meant, I agree, and hell yeah. And when I was done, she said, who do we get to have the party? That was both harder and easier than it sounded. Easier because there were only three kids whose parents were out of town that night. Harder because those kids sucked. Two were junior Chamber of Commerce and couldn't be trusted. One was Ale Martinez, who, it turned out, Sherelle had been keeping tabs on the whole time he'd been AWOL from school, messaging with him late at night when I was in bed and shut off to keep from waking up my nosy sister. Ale says his dad's going to be in Mexico that weekend, visiting his mom. Ale's dad was a U.S. citizen, and so was Ale, but his mom had been undocumented and got deported when he was little. Sherelle had on that defiant face of hers, daring me to make a big deal out of the fact that she and Ale had been sneaking around. Will he have a party? She rolled her eyes. He always has a party, every single time his dad goes south. Him and his Candy Billy friends, headphone parties so the neighbors don't phone it in. They even make birium. I made a face, then pictured Alejandro and his buddies and their lame-ass girlfriends in a huge cuddle puddle, sloppy drunk on birium and giggling like babies. Ew. So ask him. Sherelle's expression was pure animal in a trap. Can't you do it? I just gave her a look. Shit, she said with feeling. The way she said, hi, Ale, when she got him on the phone was the most surprising thing of all. She practically sang the words. Listening to her into the conversation made me wonder whether I knew her at all. She even giggled at one point. Love is blind and stupid. Really, really stupid. When she was done, she put the phone in her pocket. All set. You gonna say anything? About what? About that. Ale Martinez, Sherelle. She snorted. Okay, so I like him. Who cares? It's not like I don't know he's a fool. She tapped her temple. But, you know, she tapped her heart. Doesn't mean I'm not in control. I only take him in small sips. Keeps him tolerable. If you say so. Like I said, it's a good thing I'm immune to Sherelle's looks. It was also a good thing we weren't trying to keep Ale's party secret. There were a lot of kids at Burbank High who remembered him as that fun dude who used to throw those amazing parties before he disappeared, and the news that he was still alive and still throwing them went around like wildfire. So it was only up to Sherelle and me to put the word out to the ones who weren't idiots that we were going to meet in Stowe Canyon to pregame, then arrange to meet them there after as they puffed up the hill on their bikes or on foot. There were supposed to be 23 of them, and they'd arrived in ones and twos and a foursome driven by someone's cool older sister, and then five more in an Uber, which was D-U-M dumb because everyone knew that Uber logged everything and were hella snitches, roll over for the cops without a warrant, not that warrants were hard to come by. They came with flasks and six-packs and vapes, and they found us by following the blaze marks we chalked high up in the trees with glow-in-the-dark chalk sticks, giggling and stumbling through the night with the lights from their airplane mode phones bobbing toward us. We made him turn them off and bag their phones using the pouches we got off Antoine, who got them from the Wobblies. At 15 people, we were way too noisy, and no amount of shushing would keep it down. We'd get spotted soon, but there were supposed to be 23. 23 people we knew and liked and trusted, though maybe not to show up in time. Didn't want to go without them. Should we split in two? I asked Sherelle, counting up again for the 30th time. Maybe they'd phoned us to say they'd be late, but of course our phones were off and bagged. Sherelle spit on the ground. She looked pale in the moonlight. Don't want to get caught on my own and don't want to turn on my phone to figure out where you got to. We got one problem with those fools late and missing. We don't need two problems with not knowing where we are. I looked at her, eyes so wide you could see the white all around the pupils, neck tense. I realized how scared she was, and that made me scared. Because there was a damn good reason to be scared. We were risking serious consequences, jail time even, to throw a party. The knowledge of that went from something in my head to something in my guts in a second, left me feeling like I'd been punched. I wobbled. Why the actual fuck was I doing this? Why are we doing this, Sherelle? She went from scared to furious so fast it scared me twice, and it wasn't the normal Sherelle eyeball poison. This was real uncontrolled anger that made me take a step back. We're doing it because it was important to you, she hissed, so intense that other people turned to watch us. She forced herself to calm down and bent her head toward me. You tell me, Lene, why are we doing this? Maybe it was the jolt of new, immediate fear that I got when her fury welled up that got me past my future, theoretical fear of jail and let me get back to my thoughts, because now I could access them. Because we're all so sure that there's no way to escape, that we're all going to be done to, not doing. Sherelle, I'm graduating high school this year, and as far as anyone can tell, there is no reason for me even to exist when I finish. My mom would miss me, and so would Tisha, but Sherelle, no one needs them to exist either. We are spare humans. Don't you remember economics class? The lower the pay is, the worse the work, the more unemployed people they need to make the people with those terrible jobs feel like they can't afford to quit them. The most use the Zadas have for either of us is to be miserable and downpressed so bad that everyone else works double hard so they don't have to join us. Sherelle cocked her head. You sound like a wobbly. Do I? I replayed what I'd said. I hadn't spent a lot of time with wobblies, but I'd read some of the pamphlets they left in the toilets, the darknet rants you had to click through to use their proxies. I guess I do. Well, who cares? They're right. We knew they were right all along, Sherelle, but while we were in school, we could pretend that it didn't matter, that we had a purpose, to go to classes and grind for grades. But now class is over, and the bell's gonna ring, and then what? So you want to have a communist party? It wasn't a question, and it was supposed to be sarcastic. I puffed up. Yeah, damn right I do. At least we're doing something. The whole system only works because we let it work. Don't do anything to stop it from working. She spit again. It works because doing something usually means going to jail. Girl, you're supposed to be smart. Be smart. It's not too late for all of us to go to the party tonight. Some of Ale's friends are cute. I'll introduce you. I remembered that it had been me who'd had doubts and went to Sherelle for reassurance. Instead, I got this, rage and fear. Neither of us was sure about this, and it was too late. The stragglers were coming through the woods. It was time to tell them that we were going somewhere else tonight, somewhere that all of us had bullshitted about wanting to go to since freshman year. A chance to make the world do something for us for a change, instead of to us. We're going, Sherelle, you and me, and them. It's going to be amazing. We're going to get away with it clean. We're going to have the most amazing senior year in the history of Burbank High. You believe in me? Lene, I don't believe in you. But I like you, and I trust you. She grinned suddenly. I got your back. Let's do this. All right, then. I'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to the Cory Doctorow Podcast, licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Sharealike US 3.0. Or as Woody Guthrie put it in another context, this song is copyrighted in the US under Seal of Copyright 154085 for a period of 28 years, and anyone caught singing it without our permission will be a mighty good friend of ourn, because we don't give a dern. Publish it, write it, sing it, swing to it, yodel it, we wrote it, that's all we wanted to do. Many thanks to John Taylor Williams for mastering. That's Ryneck Studio, Ryneck Studio at gmail.com. John Taylor Williams is a full-time self-employed audio engineer, producer, composer, and sound designer. In his free time, he makes beer, jewelry, odd musical instruments, and furniture. He likes to meditate, to read, and to cook. Talk to you next week.